Hi, and welcome to the Salvation Army Southwest podcast. You'll find engaging messages here, so please go ahead and listen and check out some of our other messages and enjoy what you hear. You can always follow us online on our Facebook page or go to our website to find out more information. Thank you for listening.
Commander Commissioner Robert Donaldson giving us a message about our national prayer focus throughout Australia in the Salvation Army. So for the next couple of weeks, the national prayer focus is called Jesus-centered. It's a time for each of us to see how we can be Jesus-centered as individuals, as churches, as mission expressions, and collectively as a Salvation Army. And the video that we just watched, the Commissioner referred to a field guide. So I have a copy of the field guide. So if anybody wants a copy after the meeting today, let me know. And I'm more than happy to photocopy it for you if you want a written copy. And it's basically like a devotional book that has each day a different passage or a reflection to read and something to think about focusing us on being more Jesus-centered as a Salvation Army. So come and see me at the end. I can also give you the website, which is my.salvos.org.au, which is you can find digital copies of the field guides, but you can find lots of resources on there, including videos. And he referred to the prayer meetings that are on there. So they're each night, they're at 5 o'clock in WA time. There is an evening prayer meeting. And so they follow the devotional field guide as well. And that is happening right up until the 11th of September. And the theme has been chosen by our leadership in the Salvation Army, but it's come out of last year's prayer focus. And last year's prayer focus was God is seen when we are one. And the resounding message that came out of last year's prayer focus is that we want to be more Jesus-centered. We want to see how we can fit Jesus into our lives more, that as a Salvation Army and as individuals. So they've compiled through various salvos, and he mentioned 21 different people have compiled all the resources for this year to focus us back on how do we be more Jesus-centered as a nation. And so much of the content has also come out of a book, also by the same name. Oh, I'm doing really well today. Everything keeps falling down. I don't need that one anymore. So it's a book called Jesus-Centered. So it's written by Steve Brown. And so lots of the material in the devotions are coming from that book as well. And I've actually got a spare copy. So if anybody is really burning to read the actual book, not just the field guide, please come and see me because I can get that to you during the week because it's a really easy read. I've only just started it myself. I'm trying to follow it through as we go through the various things. And I'm actually going to speak about one of the first topics in the book. And so this book is all about becoming Jesus-centered. And the very first chapter speaks about following Jesus. Because really, if to live a Jesus-centered life, or if you want to be Jesus-centered, you first have to follow him. Would that make sense? You know, someone who doesn't know about Jesus, it'd be very hard for them to live a Jesus-centered life if they don't actually know who he is and follow him. So we're going to look at this idea, and we're going to look at a scripture that is right at the beginning of the book of Mark, right at the beginning of Jesus' ministry when he is calling his followers. He's calling people to follow him. So we're going to look in Mark chapter 1, if you've got your Bibles with you, right at the beginning of the book of Mark. Mark chapter 1, but we're going to read verses 16 to 20. So, and this is Jesus right at the beginning calling his followers, calling his disciples. And verse 16 says, "As Jesus walked beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and his brother Andrew casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. 'Come, follow me,' Jesus said, 'and I will send you out to fish for people.' At once they left their nets and followed him. When he had gone a little farther, he saw James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John in a boat, preparing their nets. Without delay, he called them, and they left their father, Zebedee, in the boat with the hired men and followed him. We can see so much in just those short passage. We can see so much of what it means to follow Jesus and to start this idea of living a Jesus-centered life. One of the first things that I notice is that Jesus came to them. He went looking and finding people. These men were not out looking for Jesus. They were fishing. They were doing their normal everyday things. And yet Jesus came to find them. They were not even looking for someone to follow probably at that stage. And that gives me hope because there's so many people in our world that just seem to be going about their everyday life, oblivious that even Jesus is around. But Jesus is going to go to them just as he's done for us. We don't even know if these men had any idea of who Jesus was. It doesn't actually say that they'd heard about Jesus or heard that he had been born in a manger a long time before. They didn't even hear about his miracles. It doesn't tell us that they even knew who this man was. But yet Jesus took the time to come, which suggests that Jesus does not wait for us to come to him. And I'm so glad of that fact, that Jesus does not sit back. He's not a disconnected God watching from a distance, waiting for us to make the first move. Jesus himself asks them to come and follow him. Jesus not only makes the effort to come to us, but he also presents the invite to follow him. He doesn't just come and kind of hang around waiting for us to initiate, "Hey, Jesus, can I come follow you?" He makes the invitation first. He is the author of the start of our Jesus-centered life. He is the one that comes to us and invites us into life with him. The other thing I notice is the immediacy in which these men just drop everything in response to Jesus' invite. There is no hesitation. No, hang on a minute while I finish what I'm doing. Hang on, Jesus, you know, I want to go catch some more fish first. There's no 20 questions. You know, why do you want me to come? Where am I going? What is it going to look like? Do I need to bring anything? There's none of that. It's just immediate. Verse 18 says, at once they left their nets and followed him. At once. I read this and I think I must be a slow learner. I don't think I had as much faith as these men. My call from God was not immediate. I had too much doubt. And I certainly had way more questions about what it was going to be like. My journey of following Jesus has not been that immediate. I don't know for you, maybe some of you kind of heard the call of God and dropped everything and followed. I'm kind of a bit more. 2 years? Oh, well, there you go. See? Maybe we're less like the disciples than we think. We give the disciples a bad name. Sometimes we read some of the stories and we think, oh, well, how did they not get it? Like, they had Jesus with them. But when I think about my own life, I get it even less. Now, I'm not just talking about the initial moments that we start to follow Jesus. Like, this was the initial call. But each and every day we make decisions to follow Jesus. It's our choice to follow him on a day-to-day basis. I was a Christian for a long time before Jesus asked me to follow him into full-time ministry as an officer. And my immediate response was, no way. I didn't even take time to think about it. My response was, no way. Thank you very much. Come again. And I had to wrestle with it because God kept calling. And I like the fact that God kind of keeps calling us even when our initial response is not straight away. All the time, Jesus is asking us to follow him. It's not just a once-in-a-lifetime thing way back when. Each and every day And each and every moment, God has a new plan for us. He's asking us to follow and trust him. He wants us to follow him into new paths, to new opportunities, new plans. Even when we go astray in our faith or we lose our focus, God kind of calls us back. He keeps calling us back to follow him. We need to continue to hear that call that God, you know, when we kind of veer off the path, and I'm not talking about you necessarily walking completely away from your faith. I'm just talking about, you know, your everyday journey where you get distracted, where the things of this world, the dimmer is not on. And the things of this world distract us. Jesus will be still there calling, saying, come, follow me. And he brings us back on track. I see a pattern in this story that I see elsewhere in the Bible. The pattern that Jesus and God interrupts our lives and what we are doing to get us to follow him. In this passage, we see Jesus interrupt the men that were fishermen. They were in the midst of fishing while Jesus calls them. They had their nets in their hands ready to go, and Jesus interrupted them, interrupts their lives and says, come follow me. When we think back to the story about Moses, God interrupts Moses in the wilderness with a burning bush. I don't know how much more interruption you can get. That's a grab your attention moment. He interrupts Moses in that moment to tell him to come and follow his plan to rescue his people in Egypt. Think about Mary, the mother of Jesus. How interrupted was her life when the angel came to her and said, you're going to have a baby. You're not married. You're a virgin, but you're going to have a baby. That's like the biggest interruption of life that could be. And then we see the man Saul, who later becomes Paul, and he's on the road to go and persecute Christian people. And he's on the middle of that road, and Jesus comes to him and says, why are you doing this? Why are you persecuting me? And he makes him blind. That's an interruption. He interrupts Saul's life in that moment. And in my life, Jesus interrupted my life. I was a teacher and quite happy as a teacher. And God came calling to me and said, hello, I want you to follow me. I want you to become a minister of the gospel. I want you to work as a Salvation Army officer. And my response was, no way. Obviously, I did say yes at some point because I'm standing here today. But he interrupted my life. Like, I was really happy being a teacher. I loved my work. But yeah, God does radically transform. Has God ever interrupted your life? Have you been going on one plan and God kind of intervenes in that and says, hello, I've got a different plan for you? Yeah. Often God interrupts us in the things that we're doing and wants to radically transform them for his purpose. Jesus calls these fishermen and transforms them to be fishers of people. He's still using the same idea of what they had in the initial, but he's making it for a godly purpose. God calls a virgin to be the mother of his son. God is a God of irony, is he not? But he's a God of transformation. God calls Moses, a man who had been raised by Egyptians, to free the Israelites from an Egyptian Pharaoh ruler. God uses what we already have for his purposes. God called a man who was persecuting Christians to become one of the greatest promoters for Christ. He turns Saul into Paul. He takes a man who was about to go and kill a whole heap or persecute a whole heap of Christians and make him one of the greatest promoters of the faith. And God called a humble school teacher to become a teacher for him. God sometimes interrupts our life in the things that distract us from him and calls us to follow him. If you think about the woman at the well and the story, when she comes, Jesus interrupts her life in a time where she has great shame and embarrassment. She's coming to collect water in the middle of the day to avoid the gossip, to avoid other people. And her circumstances were interrupted. And that woman, she was immediate. When she heard the good news of who Jesus was, that she could have living water, she immediately went back to her friends and family and her hometown and her neighborhood and told them all about this wonderful man that she had met. Her life was interrupted. Her life, the shame, the embarrassment, the life that she was living, trying to find security and trying to find her place with men, was interrupted. And God said, and Jesus said to her, I will give you living water. She not only left her shame and embarrassment behind to go back to her neighborhood, but she actually left the very jug she had brought to fill the water with behind. I'd never noticed that before, that she left the jug behind. She knew that the physical water wasn't the thing that was going to save her life or to keep her alive. She had experienced Jesus, the living water. What are the things that you need to leave behind? Or what have you left behind when God has put in a plan or interrupted your life? What is it that you need to put behind to follow him, to live a Jesus-centered life? So the fishermen, they left behind their nets. The woman left behind her water jug. Saul left behind his persecuting ways. And I left behind a teaching career. When God interrupts our life, it is often in ways that we wouldn't necessarily choose for ourselves and wouldn't even prefer to do. It takes us out of our comfort zone. I'm pretty sure that Mary did not want to have a child out of her marriage, that she did not want to be carrying the baby to someone that wasn't her husband. I'm sure that was not her choice. And not something that she had planned for herself. And I'm pretty sure that Saul did not want to become blinded and that he had no intention of even being nice to Christians, let alone actually becoming the greatest Christ follower. And I certainly did not want to give up teaching. It was certainly my comfort zone where I felt at home. Working with 4- and 5-year-olds is a lot less threatening than rooms full of adults. That was my comfort zone. And God said, hey, I want you to follow me into ministry. I want you to stand up and preach. And I was just like, you got to be kidding me. What is God asking you to do that would make you step out of your comfort zone that you definitely wouldn't choose for yourself? What is it that's going to interrupt the plans that you have for yourself? Have you been distracted with the things of your choosing or the things that bring you comfort? Have you lost your Jesus-centeredness? I become distracted quite often and need God to interrupt my life fairly regularly, because when I, you know, try to go off on my own tangent or try to make my own plans or try to do things in my own strength, God has to come back to me and remind me to follow him. Choosing to follow Jesus can be scary. I'm not going to lie. It's unknown territory. And that's why there has to be trust. Because it is not about knowing the way. It's about following Jesus and trusting that he knows the way. If you think about the story of Peter walking on the water, Jesus calls to Peter to come to him out on the water. He was asking Peter to come into that unknown, that scary place, out of the boat, out of that comfort zone. And we sang that in our song earlier in Oceans, where it says, "You call me out upon the waters, the great unknown where feet may fail." God calls us to follow him when all logic says we shouldn't, that it would be too scary, that it's unknown, you don't know what you're doing, that you might fail. It is scary. It is unknown. And we could fail. And there are costs to following Jesus. And he asks us to count that cost and to work out for ourselves if we still want to follow him. The costs are sacrifice. They are about denying ourselves, about surrender and giving up our comforts. In this book by Steve Brown, Jesus Centered, it says on page 11, being Jesus centered means choosing a lifetime of surrender. It's about surrendering what our plans are, what we want in life, and saying, okay, Jesus, I'm going to follow you and I'm going to trust that you have the right plan for me, that I'm going to surrender choice to say, I'm going to follow you. Jesus himself was the greatest example of surrender. Being Jesus-centered can be scary. And that fear can become a distraction that prevents us from being Jesus-centered. Perhaps God has interrupted your life, asking you to do a task that scares the pants off you. Maybe he's asking you to have a God conversation with someone. Maybe he wants you to attend or maybe even to run a small group. Maybe God is wanting you to give or give more of your time, your talents, your resources, or even your finances. What stops you from doing the things that God calls you to do? What distracts you from doing these things? What brings you comfort and safety that you're unwilling to or too scared to give up? What are you needing to leave behind? What are you putting your trust in? Are you trusting in the things of comfort and safety, or are you trusting in the plan of God? Peter was able to go out upon the water as he was putting his trust in Jesus. Are you a follower of Jesus? Are you continuing to follow him? Do you need to get back on track? Have you kind of wandered off the path a little and you need to hear his call for you so that you can get back into a Jesus-centered life? As a local church here in Bunbury, and for those online, part of this wider congregation, are we following Jesus? Or have we become distracted by the things of this world? Have we lost our Jesus-centeredness? Have we lost our Jesus focus as a church? Are we willing to leave behind the things that hold us back in order to follow Jesus into the new plan that he might have for us? Are we too much in our comfort and safety to step into what God is calling us to do? Is God interrupting our church without interrupting our plans in order to bring in his plan? Is he asking us to do the scary, the unknown, the things that we wouldn't necessarily choose ourselves? Are we willing to allow God to interrupt our plans in order to follow his plans? Are we even listening to the call of God for where he wants us to follow? Are we responding immediately? And this one I've got to work on. I'm too much of a questioner. I don't know about anybody else, but are we responding immediately to the call of God? Are we able to drop everything and leave behind what we've got in our hands, in our lives, to be able to follow God's plan and where he wants to lead us? Or are we, like me, too busy negotiating or redefining the plan because, you know, God might need a little help in, you know, changing the plan just a little to fit my plan? Or are we plain out ignoring the call of God to follow him? In my life, I want to be more responsive to when Jesus calls me to follow him. I want to listen for his voice. I want to respond with immediacy and leave behind the old in order to move into the new. I want to leave my comforts as much as I love them, because I know that's where God is wanting me to go. I want my life to be more Jesus-centered. I want our church to be more Jesus-centered. I want the Salvation Army to be more Jesus-centered. I want us to move forward even when the way is scary and unknown. I want us to put our trust in the God who comes to us and stays with us and calls us to follow him. He cares enough to personally call each of us. My prayer is for those who've never heard the call of Jesus to follow him, that today they may hear his call. Not just for those that are hearing this message, for those that are in the world that may never, ever come into this building. But I pray, because I know that Jesus is there calling them. They don't have to enter a church building to hear the call of God. Jesus will go to them. And we need to be the Jesus figure in that we will go to them. That we will go because we care and love and we make the effort to go to them. And I pray that we would leave behind the things that may distract us or may hold us back. And that we would put our trust in Jesus rather than in the comfort and the safety that we have in our lives. I pray that each of us that have chosen to follow Jesus continue to hear the call to keep following him, to continue to follow his leading and to strive to be Jesus-centered. Jesus at the center of it all. We're going to sing this song in a moment. And it says, Jesus at the center of it all. Jesus be the center of my life. Jesus be the center of our church. Jesus at the center. Let that be our declaration today, that we would have Jesus as the center of it all. I'm wanting to start on this journey by being aware that Jesus is calling us first to follow him. Yes, this may be scary and take us out of our comfort zone, but Jesus is worthy of our trust. He's reliable. He will always be there. He not only comes to us to invite us to follow him, but he remains with us. He's not a God that kind of is from a distance. He's a God that is intimately involved with each of us. And he remains with us along that way when we follow him. So I'm going to invite the singers to come up and sing. So today we may declare that Jesus be the center of it all. And I want you to, maybe there's something that God has been speaking to you, maybe something that God is saying that you need to cast behind, leave behind. Maybe it's that, for me, it's the immediacy thing. I need to listen to God and obey straight away. Maybe it is something that God is saying to you, hey, you've wandered off track. Come back. Come back to following me. Whatever it is today, I pray that the Holy Spirit would guide you, that you would put Jesus back in the center of your heart and in your life. And I pray that for us as a church. Let us sing today.